Welcome into another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Balogi. Thanks for being a part of the show during this Players Week. We are presented by BetDSI.com. You can get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Balogi. You can get a hold of Golf News Net on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat at the handle Golf News Net. All of our work is at GolfNewsNet.com. And of course, we're also on Yahoo Sports' Devil Ball Golf Blog on sports.yahoo.com. We have a new sponsor this week, and that sponsor is GolfKnickers.com. Make your next golf outing a memorable one with GolfKnickers from GolfKnickers.com. Whether you're playing in a weekend foursome or suiting an entire team for an upcoming tournament, GolfKnickers.com has a vast selection of traditional golf knickers, Argyle socks, newsboy-style golf caps, and sweater vests to fit your needs, including ours, which we have. Check out their selection at GolfKnickers.com and make your next golf outing the most memorable it can be by using the promo code GOLFNEWS to receive 10% off your first purchase. So, as we mentioned, this is the Players' Championship week. We've got one round in the books. We did some minivan shopping earlier in the week, my wife and I, with our new daughter, Rose. So we've had not as much time to record the preview edition of this podcast, but it actually is better to do it one round in the books because of the scoring that we saw on Thursday and are seeing right now as we're recording this podcast on Friday at the Players' Stadium course. The lead right now is still 9-under. That has been met now. Jason Day shot 63, which is the course record, tied the course record set by four other players and him in the opening round. And he's now been reached by Jonas Blixt, who is 4-under through 11 holes. We can only assume that Day will be passed by somebody, maybe Alex Chayka is 7-under. He's 2-under through 8. Zach Johnson's 3-under through 8. At the point that we're recording this, so the expectation seems reasonable. Somebody's going to get to 10-under or better in the morning wave today. But looking back at yesterday's scoring average, just a touch under par, around 71, it's one of the lowest scoring days in the history of the Players' Championship, and the right combination of things happened, especially in the morning half of the draw, for that to be possible. You had basically no wind at the stadium course, and you had the right mix of firm enough fairways, so you got good rollout on your tee shots, but the putting surfaces, which are going to be completely redone after this championship, they're going to go from the current strain of Bermuda to a Tiff Eagle Bermuda. They're soft, but they roll great. So the tournament staff and the ag staff, the ground staff, decided to, I guess, let the ball roll out, but also wanted to create as pure of a roll as possible on these putting surfaces. And the reasoning for that, as explained on Golf Channel this morning, was that this particular strain of Bermuda, which they moved to in hopes of moving this championship from March to May, what is it now, 8 years ago, 9 years ago when they made that move, in making that move they went to Bermuda, and this strain of Bermuda that they have on the putting surfaces, which they redid a couple of years ago to this strain, it has a tendency to collect stuff. All kinds of different stuff, what they termed organics among the ground staff. So that could be pretty much anything, leaves, dirt, other dead animals, things like that. So ultimately, the grass isn't as pure grass. There's other stuff in there and more of it because, I guess, of the density. It just isn't quite the same and isn't good enough. So that's why they're going to move to Tiff Eagle, and they're going to get in putting surfaces that they feel will allow them to make them firmer more consistently without losing them, because Tiff Eagle can really stand up to a lot of heat, and obviously it gets very warm in Florida, and the temperature difference between having it in March and May is stark. You can have days where it's 90 degrees in May. You're not getting that very often in March. You're going to get a lot more sun in May. The times that I went to the Players' Championship when it was in March, you typically got some rain, and you got plenty of it, and it usually delayed play. So That really hasn't been a factor as much in this championship since it's moved to May. That's in part the reason why they've had it in May. And they're trying to improve the course, as we mentioned, but right now, this is a vulnerable week for the golf course. In one sense, it's kind of odd to set the course up this way for the players, to give them these scoring opportunities with or without the wind. I mean, Zach Johnson shot 67 yesterday in the afternoon wave, which was the best score in the afternoon wave. Alex Chayka was a part of that group too, shot 67. And then the morning wave obviously had 63. A bunch of guys shot 65 and 66. So there was plenty of good scoring to go around. But the tour seems to have reacted to this scoring by deciding that they want to firm up the place. But so far, we haven't seen that firmness happen on Friday. So I don't know if they're speaking out of one side of the mouth and you know, two sides of their mouth, really, saying that they want it to be firm and fast, but it's really not firm and fast, or they're limited by what they can do in terms of maintenance, in terms of their setup with the tools they have with sub-air, etc. Are they able to make these greens firmer and faster? Can they make the fairways firmer and faster to put a premium on putting the ball in the fairway, to maybe take driver out of some of these guys' hands? Because right now, these guys are just going after it with driver, and there's really no penalty. They're doing it with impunity because they're getting rollout, but they're not getting so much rollout that it rolls out of the fairway like you would see at a U.S. Open. And I don't think they want to take it in that direction either, but they also want it to be a little bit firmer than it is, almost artificially firmer than it usually is. So they're kind of transitioning here between the way of thinking that they've had to set up this championship with the current course setup, the current green complexes, the current strain of Bermuda that they're using, and where they're going to try and take it next year to make it firmer and faster. Ultimately, this tournament does have a way of figuring out how to get firmer and faster over the last few years, because the winning score kind of hovers in that 13 to 15 under par range, which isn't bad. That's not, I don't think that's bad. Scoring is relative, right? I mean, it's a par 72 course. You've got the par fives. You've got three of the four that are reachable. I would argue so far this week all four are reachable with the way the ball is flying and rolling out. But that all said, you got those that are accessible. You've got a bunch of short par fours that are pretty, not easy, but they're accessible if you're playing well tee to green. You've got a couple of par threes that really aren't all that difficult. I think about three. It's not a tough hole. There are some tough hole occasions, but it's not a tough hole. If you look at 13, it's a fairly easy hole, especially if you have a hole location on the left side or even toward the back where you can funnel the ball back there with relative ease. And then you've got 17, which isn't playing all that difficult right now just because the wind isn't there. It's ultimately a stock pitching wedge for a lot of these guys. Maybe a 9-iron if they push it all the way back to the back edge of the green, which is kind of where they have it today, back left. So, again, you've got a golf course set up for scoring, and the conditions also only enhance that. So you've got players. Jonas Blix just dropped a shot on his 12th hole of the day, so the lead remains at 9 under par. But I think that there has to be some sense of concern from the PGA Tour about the scoring on this golf course, not necessarily because of the finishing scores, the ones that win. They seem to be able to get this course firm and fast over the course of 4 days. But over the last four players' championships, in day one, you've had someone shoot 63. Roberto Castro did in the first round in 2013. Obviously, he didn't go on to win. He finished T19. He shot 78 in the second round. In 2014, we had Martin Kaymer open with 63. He went on to win. He had to hold off Jim Furyk and Sergio and Jordan Spieth primarily, who he was with, but Spieth kind of stumbled in the final day. And they had weather issues, so that created a problem. But then we had 2015. Nobody shot 63 on the first day. In fact, the best score was 67. A bunch of guys shot 67 to start the players last year. And then yesterday, we had Jason Day shoot 63. If you look at the scores of 63 on the stadium course, you have these three in three of the last 4 years. You had no rounds of 63 in the 2000s. And you had one round of 63 in 1994. And you had another in 1992. So there had been a long stretch of time between 63. 19 years between when Greg Norman shot 63 to open the Players, and he won at 24 under par, sets the tournament scoring record, which still remains, obviously, between his opening 63 and what Roberto Castro did in 2013, surprising a lot of people. Although, interestingly enough, Roberto Castro owns the course record, or a share of the course record, at both courses at Sawgrass. Not only does he have it for the stadium course, he also has it on the Valley course, Dyes Valley course, which has hosted the Web.com Tour Championship a few times. Well, not this year, but it has hosted it previously for the last several years. So that is a fascinating thing about Roberto Castro. He seems to have a propensity to go low. He has the course record, I think, at a couple other PGA Tour tracks. He doesn't finish things off, but he can start really well, and he can get hot very quickly for 18 holes, but then he doesn't sustain it. So that makes him a really interesting figure. Nonetheless, so We've got a top player in the world, Jason Day, comes out and shoots 9 under par, looks perfect in doing it, looks like he's rolling the rock great, great from tee to green. Obviously, wasn't really a part of the Masters discussion, because that all really centered around Jordan Spieth. But if he's playing this way on a golf course like this, where he's able to hit, and he did this yesterday, he had a 297-yard 2-iron yesterday. Oakmont is going to be long. I mean, it's going to be 7,500, 7,600 yards. But it's going to be firmer than what we're getting right now at the Players. So he's going to be able, if he chooses on a lot of holes, to hit 2-iron or hit 3-wood. He doesn't need driver to get around Oakmont. And if he's playing this well from tee to green and he's rolling the rock like he is right now, it might be time to take a step back and say that Jordan Spieth isn't a favorite for the U.S. Open. It's Jason Day. It's Jason Day in every tournament he plays, if he plays like this. Now, obviously, he's prone to the big number. Shot 81 here in the second round last year to miss the cut. He shot 79 at Heritage, just kind of had that letdown round after playing such great golf to start the year. But whatever he's doing right now is working. He's got everything. He's got the mental game working brilliantly. Obviously, he has the talent and the physical capacity to just overwhelm golf courses. He's rolling the ball very well with the putter, just magic kind of stuff. And after the 1 week with the red putter, he went back to the black putter, the Itsy Bitsy, and has been murdering it so far. And he seems dialed in. And I think the remarkable thing here is that he tuned out, obviously, at the end of last year to be with his wife, Ellie, so they could have their second kid. And he took his time away to be a dad and get acclimated to having that change in his life, took the time off, came back, kind of played his way into good form. He didn't do well in his title defense at Torrey, missed the cut, although that was a weird week, so you can kind of excuse that. Then he finds a way to win a couple in a row, wins at the API, he wins the match play, two very different events on very different golf courses. He overwhelms both of those golf courses to do it, and he's doing the same thing here after finishing T5 in New Orleans at another die track, TPC Louisiana. That was weather shortened 54 holes because of all the rain that they had. But he said, you know, I've really got to be able to focus on the Players' Championship. That's why I'm not playing Wells Fargo. That's what I'm worried about. I'm going to get locked in for that. And the result is there. I mean, the 63 is not a fluke. That's pretty standard these days. I mean, not 63, but a good score under par is pretty standard these days for Jason Day. So I think that we have to adjust our expectations a little bit. And we look at Rory McIlroy is right now on absolute fire, by the way. And we may have to talk about this more a little bit later. But right now, Rory McIlroy is 7 under par through 7 holes. Let me repeat that. He is 7 under par through 7 holes. He started on number 10, which is his favorite side. He is 36 strokes better on the back nine of the TPC Sawgrass compared to the front nine over the last 3 years. But that's incredible. 4 birdies out of the gate, a par on 14. He went a little long with his second shot, although it was on a great line. He makes birdie at 15, eagle at 16. I mean, he just pumped one down the right side of the fairway, hit his second shot to 53 feet and made a bomb for eagle. So he's feeling it right now, and then reached the green at 17. The island green, or the supposed island green, I guess it's not an island green, fine, it's a peninsula green. But he has 48 feet left for birdie. It'll be a good two putt there. So he's got a chance on 18 to get an 8 under par score out of the gate. That would be the record 9 hole score at Sawgrass. Right now he's on pace for 29, which is a record that Shane Lowry set yesterday, shooting 29 on the back. So Rory McIlroy has come to play, and this is on a golf course that he said he doesn't really like all that much because it throttles him a little bit. But in these conditions where it's not so firm and the greens are receptive, he can blast driver, and he can do it not with impunity, but with the way that he hits it off the tee, he can shape it where he wants, and it's going to hold. And that's why he's able to dominate the golf course like this. But we'll come back to that hopefully over the course of the half hour. We'll give you a little update by the end, and then maybe we'll just go, wow, it's amazing, or not. But we'll see what happens as he makes the turn to the front. With that all said, you look at what Day did on Thursday, and then you look at what Jordan Spieth did playing alongside of him, And the contrast is pretty stark. I mean, Day is dialed in. He knows what he's doing. He likes where he's at. He feels confident mentally. Spieth is not in that position right now. Whatever happened to Augusta National obviously happened, and it's going to stick with him, not from shot to shot, but it is something you have to remember in the back of your mind. But we also have to remember that Spieth's mechanics have been off so far in 2016, and part of that is because he's been trying to make a change in his golf swing, and he's trying to make alterations ultimately that will make him a better player tee to green, make him a little bit longer, it'll make him a little bit more consistent. Because if you noticed, and I hope that you did other than the two that he put in the water on 12 in the final round, Spieth's miss at the Masters was short right, flail weak right. And that's because he's kind of carrying that left arm, kind of holding on, and when he hits it well, he can saw it off a little bit and just get inside enough so that he makes good contact with the club face, and he kind of hits a little cut. And if he kind of comes over the top a little bit, he can keep that left arm straight and still close the face and hit a little draw. But when he's not able to control that, he kind of keeps that left arm straight, he doesn't get back to square, and he hits a weak fade and makes poor contact because the face is a little bit open. So he can even compress down on it, but it's still going to the right. So that's what he's trying to fight against right now from tee to green. And he says he feels confident over the ball on the range. He feels confident over the ball on the golf course. But he's still fighting that instinct to basically feel like he's aiming left when he's trying to hit these shots. And that he's got to not feel that way because he's actually trying to hit the ball exactly where he intends. He just feels like he's aiming left because he's not setting up for the big cut. So I'm interested to see how this evolves over the next few weeks. He's basically got the month of May to play through the changes he's trying to make in his swing. And he can grind as well as anybody. And you kind of saw that a little bit yesterday until the final hole. He was 2 under on the day. Really had nothing going for him other than a great first hole. And just kind of hanging on, and then gets to the ninth hole, his final hole of the day, the par 5, goes long and 2. Nothing wrong with that. That's good aggressive play. But then he can't get the ball on the green with his third, with his fourth, which is just outside the bunker. He hits it a little too weak on an uphill lie. And he looks over Michael Greller, his caddy, like he is absolutely flabbergasted. Like he cannot believe the ball didn't release on the putting surface and down toward the hole, give him a good chance for a par. And from there, he 3-jacks it to make 7. He made a total mess of the hole, leaves with even par 72, and all of a sudden, after seeing what Jason Day did, nearly holding out from an awkward lie in the greenside bunker in front of the pin to shoot 62, makes a tap-in birdie for 63, and here's Spieth walking to the first tee later this afternoon, 9 shots behind the lead, and obviously that will, as we mentioned, probably expand. He'll be further back going into his day 2. And that's hard to believe if you're Jordan Spieth. But the way that he acted when things didn't go his way on the final hole of the day and with the media afterward, he was a little salty about, well, what happened there? Well, it took 7 shots to get in the hole. No shit, Sherlock. We got that. And I think that there's an element of frustration here that has developed for Spieth because, for one, he didn't win the Masters. I think if he wins the Masters and we're all fawning over this guy becoming the first in history to win a major in consecutive years wire-to-wire fashion, if he wins 3 majors by the age of 22, he looks great going into the U.S. Open. If that 7 doesn't happen, his whole world outlook changes. But then he shows up on Tuesday for his news conference. People are asking him, obviously, about what happened at Augusta. And he kind of says, well, I thought everyone's kind of forgotten about what happened, but I guess you guys haven't. And that's not true, and he knows it, but he's trying to kind of steer the media conversation away from what happened at Augusta toward what he thought was going to be a productive week at Sawgrass and try to get away from this narrative that he's got to avenge his loss and get over it and all that stuff. And that's true. He's a golfer. I mean, things happen. You lose all the time. If you look at his last 5 majors, he's been in it, and he's given away 3 of them. In my view, he's given away 3 of them. And I'm sure in his view, he's given away 3 of them. Even the PGA Championship he gave away because he probably felt like if he got one-on-one with Jason Day, he'd have a chance to win, and no matter what he did, he couldn't do it at Whistling Straits. Lost by 3. So I'm sure he feels like he gave that one away in some sense. But at this point, Spieth has to feel like The whole narrative has changed. Now instead of fawning over how he's the greatest guy ever, he's such a great person, he's an even better person than a golfer. He's the golden child. Now the golden child has a couple dings, and that's the way the media narrative changes. I mean, when you screw up, you've screwed up, and until you resolve that, you have continued to screw up. And I think that Spieth is trying to play that game a little bit, where he's trying to get the media to believe everything's fine, I've moved on, that I'm not going to be bothered by this, this isn't going to affect the rest of my life. Hint, it will. But he's trying to move on. And at the same time, he's trying to resolve the different way that he's being treated by media and fans and even people who didn't care about golf until they saw him put two in the water in the final round, and they're kind of trying to console him, and he's trying to put up the old cliche, well, my dog didn't die. Well, I understand that, but you gave away a piece of major championship history with two in the water. So if it matters to us, and it really doesn't affect our lives all that much, then it certainly has to matter to you, no matter how much you try and tell us it doesn't matter to you or doesn't affect you day to day. I'm sure you think about it at least once a day, if not twice a day. Doug Sanders, who gave away what was the 1970 Open Championship to Jack Nicklaus because he couldn't make an 18-inch putt, once said on an interview with Golf Channel that he can sometimes go 15 minutes without thinking about giving that Open Championship away. So, I'm not saying that at the age of 22, world-beating, all-confident Jordan Spieth thinks about that shot every 15 minutes. But he probably thinks about it more than once a day. And now he's trying to resolve the fact that in Jason Day, he has a foe who he's not in his head, unlike he is with Rory McIlroy, and he knows he's in Rory's head. Jason Day is just as good of a putter when he's putting at his best, not minute to minute, but at his best, as Jordan Spieth. He's more powerful. He can play a wider variety of shots. They're both slow as crap, so pace isn't an issue. But ultimately, Jason Day is the foil for Jordan Spieth right now. Rory McIlroy has his moments. Right now, he's 7-under through 8 holes. He could be a factor in this tournament and still win the thing. But McIlroy is streaky. Jason Day, at least right now, seems... he gets in a groove more easily than Rory McIlroy does. Spieth is the kind of guy who's not Tiger. No one's Tiger. And for anyone to suggest that is kind of preposterous. But he is more of a grinder type in that Tiger mold where he can take a bad round and hang on. And I think that's what bothers Rory McIlroy a lot about it. But he also can go low. He can do all the things that you need to do without having the length. But I think that Spieth has to see he's getting outdriven by 30, 40, 50 yards. When you look at Jason Day, you're going to go, how am I going to keep up with this guy? If he gets better and I get better, length still matters. Hitting a 6-iron into a par 5 differs dramatically than hitting an 8-iron. It just does. I mean, there's nothing you can do except get longer. And so that's what I think Spieth is chasing. And he said in the offseason he would be chasing some extra yards. And right now, that hasn't worked out to his benefit. Not that he hasn't played good golf. Obviously, to contend in the Masters, you have to play good golf. But that was not his best golf. That was intelligent, grinder's golf to get to where he got in the Masters. And kudos to him for doing that. But now the reality comes that he's got to be on his game. He can't play that grind it out style week to week and think he's going to be successful. It works in some of the majors. It works in the first two majors of the year. You can grind out good scores at Augusta National because you know where to put the ball, you know where to avoid. If you can stay smart, make the pars when you need, make the birdies when you want, maybe an eagle here or there, you can put together a good round without your best stuff. At the U.S. Open, you can use your intelligence to be able to play a brand of golf that might put you in trouble at times, but if you can execute your strategy and you stick to it and you don't get frustrated by what happens at a U.S. Open, again, intelligent grinders golf can carry you a long way. It's not entirely the case of the Open Championship. There's a lot of luck there. The PGA Championship, it's certainly not the case. It is not typically an intelligent player's favor. Yeah, it's an event where there's a very fair, stern test, and you don't have to be the ultimate thinker to figure it out. Baltusrol may be a change from that, but that's the case. So I'm sure that in Speedy's mind, as he's watching Day shoot 63, he goes, how am I going to beat this guy at Oakmont? How am I going to beat this guy in the other majors this year? And if he can't, then what do you do? If that's the conclusion. So it's an interesting mental conundrum that Jordan Spieth is facing right now from multiple fronts. The fact that he gets the media attention that's different than what he got last year. The fact that so many people now see him as a sympathetic figure instead of a dominating figure or a tremendous story. You've got Jason Day, who's lapping him this year in terms of the way that he's playing. You got to try to make a change. You've got a lot of things going on. And on top of all that, you've got these corporate sponsorships, building this brand through your agent, Jay Dancy. And you've got to have those commitments that have upped in nature, they've upped in money, they've upped in time. There's a lot of things going on with Jordan Spieth right now, and it makes him absolutely fascinating because it seems like Jason Day hasn't rejected those things, but he doesn't seem as interested in them as Jordan Spieth is. And it seems right now that Jason Day, among the guys in the big three, has one hype machine behind him, TaylorMade Adidas Golf. They take care of all of it for him. They do great stuff for him, but it's one-stop shopping. All he's got to do is worry about being the face of that brand right now. He can do that. It's just playing golf. He doesn't have to do a whole ton of sponsor commitments. He doesn't have to do all these different types of things that take away from his time and the schedule that he wants to have to get on the path he needs to play good golf. And I think there's a lesson to be had here, but there's also a lot of money to be had, and that's why Rory McIlroy is a little bit streaky, and that's why Jordan Spieth is battling a lot of different things on a lot of different fronts right now. So the guy with the clearest mind is playing the best golf. Just saying. So just before we get out of here, just so you know, we didn't reach that point where the lead has changed. It's still 9-under par. It's Jonas Blixt, Zach Johnson, and Jason Day are all hanging in there. Rory McIlroy is on the 18th hole. He's playing his 9th hole of the day. He's playing from just off the fairway at 18 at the stadium course. So something to look out for, obviously. If he shoots 63 or better today, that would be one hell of a round. He obviously only needs two more at this point to hang in there and shoot 63. Three more would get you 62. And if you somehow make a birdie on 18, I think we start talking about a 59 possibly. But that's a long way from now. But it goes to show you that McIlroy has not given up on this week, even though he came out yesterday and shot 72 and didn't look all that great in doing it. Again, we have started a new program on GNN Radio. You may have heard it last night. I hope that you did. TJ Reeves, who has worked for PGA Tour Entertainment, PGAtour.com, he used to host the morning show on PGA Tour Radio on Sirius XM, has joined our ranks and is going to host a show with me as well. Will Haskett, who's a website contributor and also has been a contributor to PGA Tour Radio. And we're going to host a show around the biggest tournaments of golf, a live show, 30 minutes after network coverage ends, from the Players' Championship, from the U.S. Open, the Open Championship, the PGA, probably the Olympics and Tour Championship, and certainly the Ryder Cup. The not-so-creative title is GNN Live, but we'll finally be bringing you live radio broadcasts at the most important times in the golf calendar. I can't tell you how excited I am about that. Again, we also have the new GNN app. If you're a big radio lover, this will be great for you. It right now focuses on all of our podcasts, which are available through the app first. You'll get them quicker than anybody else, and you can listen to them uninterrupted without having to download a podcast. It's on demand, which is great. We're also updating the GNN app so that you can access all of our stuff, our articles, our podcasts, our videos, everything through the app, and that should be coming out sooner than later. And then also we're working on a video initiative. So we've always wanted this website to be more than a website and be a place that you could access and talk about golf, a platform for a variety of people, not just ourselves, to talk about golf. So we've expanded that, and we'll continue to expand that with more podcasts and more voices and more ways of reaching out to you, including a video initiative, as we mentioned, that will put us as an over-the-top video stream and channel available through Apple TV and Roku and maybe Amazon. We'll figure that out too, as well as through our app. So we've got a lot of exciting things coming. We're really jazzed about where we are and where we're going in the future. And we're so excited you've been a part of it with us. Next week on the show, we'll talk about the Players' Championship. We'll kind of delve into the second half of the Texas swing. I guess third of the Texas swing going through the the Byron Nelson and the Colonial, and then we'll get ready for the Memorial, and then we'll try and figure out when Tiger Woods is going to play again and get ready for the Open, and boom, you know it. Before you know it, it's time to get to Oakmont. So some very exciting weeks coming up, and it all starts this week with the Players' Championship. Until next week, I'm Ryan Ballengee saying thank you so much for being a part of our show. Thank you for your support, and we'll talk to you next week from the 19th Hole Golf Show.